Big Brothers Big Sisters needs your help. There's a waiting list of more than 50 children hoping for a mentor. It's just a few hours a month. Be a mentor. Become a big. Visit Big Brothers Big Sisters Northeast Florida and click on Be a Big.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, we are off. It's going to be a great week, no doubt about it. Love the month of March. What an unbelievable way to kick it off. A beautiful day along the first coast. Yeah, we got some early morning rain, but she just left, and what a beauty it was. A lot of fun today. Played in a charity golf tournament. I'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. Raising some money, that's always key, particularly here along the first coast. I absolutely love March. I do. I mean, I think a lot of people out there, not around here, not in the deep south, but I think a lot of people throughout the country will tell you that March is their favorite sports month of the year. And you can be a casual college basketball fan. You can be an incredibly passionate college basketball fan. Once these conference tournaments kick off and then the NCAA tournament after, I mean, it is three straight weeks of just incredible excitement. Unlike anything else that we really see, you know, outside of, I guess, perhaps the month of October, which is my favorite month of the year. I just love October for so many different reasons. You know, you're deep into conference play in college football. The NFL, you got a real good understanding as to how your team is in the month of October, whether or not they're contenders or, you know, you're already looking at, you know, let's get ready for next year. Obviously, the pennant race in Major League Baseball. The excitement there and the World Series, which goes through the month of October. Now we'll take you into very early November. I've always liked October 1st, probably number one if I was to rank them. And then probably September 2nd. College basketball is, for me, not nearly as exciting as football or hockey, and I don't enjoy it as much as I do, let's say, Major League Baseball. But it's still an incredible event. And on top of that, now the Florida swing fully underway. We watched Colin Morikawa win yesterday, his fourth PGA Tour victory under the age of 24. I thought every tour did the right thing to honor Tiger Woods. Wearing the red, wearing the black on Sunday. That was very cool. And to hear, you know, Morikawa talk about how at the age of 24, how he idolized Woods and just how important he was to his growth within the game. It was a feel-good story for me. I know others will have a different opinion on this, but, you know, that's you, and you're entitled to it. I enjoyed it. Some great runs by Billy Horschel. Couldn't hold on. Brooks Koepka couldn't hold on. So they went low at the concession coming up next. All right, they'll go to Arnold's Place this weekend at Bay Hill. And then, of course, next week, it is the Players' Championship. I've said it forever. I wish it was still in May. They didn't listen to me. And, you know, they wanted to put this event out there before the Masters in April. This appeared to being after the Masters in April. Now we know that the PGA Championship will also take place in the month of May. But, I mean, it's really anyone's golf course coming up here in, what will it be, 9 days. Same with Arnold's tournament this weekend. That's what's great about the PGA Tour. A lot of excitement there. And on any given weekend, I mean, you can really draw from, I mean, honestly, what do you think there is? 20-some-odd players who legitimately have a chance to win TPC? I would say maybe even more, okay? These guys are so good. And when you look at the odds, yeah, there'll be a top-heavy scenario of the greatest golfers in the game. But there are many others who can string together some good rounds Thursday and Friday and be in great shape to get it done during the weekend. I feel the same way this year about college basketball. This is really a frustrating year in college hoops. And I'm trying to figure this out. I am. The product is so poor. College basketball right now, in my opinion, is the worst that I have ever seen. And I think COVID has had a lot to do with that. I think there is incredible uncertainty, and it's playing its way through these young kids mentally as well as physically. You know, five of the top nine teams lost this week. And, you know, watching all the games over the weekend, watching Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, watching Florida, Kentucky, watching Florida State, North Carolina, man, there's just some really bad basketball going on. And it's understandable because, you know, it's tough to put together these teams that stay together for 3 and 4 years. When we grew up, that was the product that we got. I was talking to you about it the other night, RJ, when I first got my feet wet in this business in the very early 90s in Tallahassee. I mean, when Christian Laettner and Grant Hill and Bobby Hurley and Thomas Hill and all those players came in, they were seniors.
Right. They stayed together for a long time. I mean, even the Fab Five stayed together for 2 years.
Yes, they did. And, you know, Tim Duncan would come in. He was there for 4 years.
Exactly. Now you got all the one and dones.
Yep. And, you know, listen, it's their opportunity to make money. I'm not belittling them for taking advantage of this. That's fine. I'm just saying, though, the product is bad. The product is down. You know, I used to talk about the difference between college baseball and AA baseball, which is completely different. AA is a much better brand. You can have a routine ground ball to shortstop in college baseball. There's no guarantee that that shortstop's going to pick up the ball and throw it over to first base. You see some of the most basic errors. You know, last weekend series, Florida State had 5 errors in, I think it was 11 innings. You know, they just got hammered by Pitt, who rolled in there. And that's baseball. Baseball can be streaky, but you know, I think the product isn't what it once was. Certainly that is the case right now in college basketball. It's just incredibly frustrating to watch these young men not be able to do the simplest of things. And among those are making a free throw, inbounding a basketball, finding the open man, taking a good shot, blocking out your opponent. It's lost. And it doesn't matter once we get into this month. It doesn't matter because everyone is going to root for the jersey, the front of the jersey. The back of the jersey means very little. It's all about the team. It's all about the program. It's all about making a run. And whether you win by playing terrible basketball or you win by putting together, you know, some of the greatest basketball that you've seen, it's still irrelevant. The bottom line is finding a way to win a game. And one of these teams is going to have to put a stretch together where they win 6 straight in order to win this year's national championship. All right, so we got a lot to do as far as that tonight. Leo Hamilton signs a 5-year extension at Florida State. He's earned it. He's done a great job. No question about it. He's got a chance to win a second consecutive Atlantic Coast Conference championship, regular season championship. But isn't it classic Florida State to, I mean, 48 hours after the worst performance that I've seen Florida State put together in years, literally years. I mean, I think the only thing worse than the two bad apples at FSU who run that particular university, let's refer to them as Mickey and Mouse. I think the only folks worse than them are the perhaps, you know, Hollywood foreign press, if you will. That was the worst performance I have seen Florida State have in 3+ years. It was just freaking gross. It was awful. And it's so covered up. It's so, it doesn't matter. Let's just let them get it out of their system. They had been on the road. They took that exhausting trip to Pitt a week ago. They took that exhausting trip to South Florida, Miami midweek. I mean, they blew a 12-point lead. If you watch the game, to begin the second half, they had 7 turnovers before they had, and they had 1 bucket. And I understand the turnovers are part of the game, but they were just handing the ball to North Carolina. There was no desire. There was no effort. Hamilton called a timeout. It didn't register with his players. The team looked disinterested. The team looked bored. And it was an awful watch. But here's the deal right now at FSU. Leonard Hamilton's the greatest thing you're ever going to get. Guy's making less than $2.5 million a year. He's a bargain. People don't care about Florida State basketball. You think I'm lying? Look at him. He's 72. How old does Leonard Hamilton look to you? About 50? Okay? Seriously, doesn't he look like a 50-year-old man? You know why he looks like he's 50? Because he's got no freaking pressure on him. Okay? None. Meat, who just lost 3 in a row to Pitt, is already hearing nepotism calls in the baseball program. We know how tough it is with the football program. No one cares about the basketball program. If they suck it up and have 22 turnovers or whatever it was and lose to Shaka Smart in the first round against Virginia Commonwealth, people would just say, yeah, but he got them there. If they lay down and die the way they did Saturday against North Carolina, people just could be like, well, you know, they had to get it out of their system. Screw that. There's no pressure. He's got no pressure at all. He can win the ACC, go in and get knocked out in the first round or get knocked out in the second round. And there are so many excuse makers who are Florida State basketball fans. It just drives me crazy. I mean, you're walking around like that's title town. Like Cowens and Company won one in the early 70s. Like George McLeod and Tad Hunter and Company won one in the late 80s. Like Charlie Ward and Douglas Edwards and Sammy Cassell and Bobby Sur and Chucky Graham won one in the early 90s. They didn't. They didn't win. They haven't come close to winning. Stop covering up the crap, okay? Their performance on Saturday was the worst thing I've seen Florida State do in over 3 years. And what does Mickey and Mouse do today? Reward Leonard Hamilton with a brand new contract after that performance. That is such classic Florida. Don't ever change Florida State. Seriously. You know, RJ, every time I think I can get away, every time I think I can just get on with life, they pull me back in.
Great movie quote.
I'm switching this up because I need to get to some positive stuff. That's the Jaguars draft. Tony Pauline joins Ballou next.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
I noticed today that at the Florida Theater, coming up after Friday's round next week at the Players Champion, at the Players Championship, they're going to play the entire album, Led Zeppelin 2. Of course, this is Heartbreaker, which I believe is with Led Zeppelin. Actually, no, wait a minute. This is the first song on Led Zeppelin 2. Before Living, Loving, She's Just a Woman. And then Ramble On. They're going to play the entire album at the Florida Theater.
We may have to get in on that.
Yeah.
I'm down.
It's after that Friday night round, you know, after the Friday round. So, hey, who knows? But, I mean, one of their greatest albums of all time. Number 2, some say. Number 4, others do say. All right, let's listen to what Tony Pauline has to say. NFL draft analyst. He joins us here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM. Tony, it's always great to catch up with you. How you doing?
I'm okay, but, you know, actually, Heartbreaker was the first song on side 2 of Zeppelin 2.
Right.
So going first, back to the album days. And, of course, you know, the most important Zeppelin album, the greatest Zeppelin album that you left out there was the incomparable Physical Graffiti, which we just celebrated the anniversary of the release of a week ago. So you can tell I know a little bit about my Led Zeppelin.
You do. And Physical Graffiti, I think, is a little bit more for like the deep cut Led Zeppelin fandom. And, you know, I would agree with you there. Fast Time at Ridgemont High, they tell the young dorky kid to play Led Zeppelin 4, but all of a sudden they're playing Kashmir from Physical Graffiti. How did that happen in one of the greatest comedies of all time?
Well, you know, you talk to most Zeppelin fans, diehard Zeppelin fans, they'll tell you one of their favorite songs is 10 Years Gone, which is off of Physical Graffiti.
Love it. Absolutely, I love it. I even love Led Zeppelin 3. There's a lot of people thought it was a little bit of a step back for them after their, you know, incredible 1 and 2, and then, of course, the mammoth number 4. You and I need to get together and talk some Led Zeppelin one of these nights, but right now we need to get to the Jags. Tony, it's always good to talk with you, but I want to have you on because, you know, I was really excited about what you had here with the Jaguars' second first-round pick and both picks in the second round. Let's start with the youngster out of Notre Dame and adding some speed with Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah. And do you believe that, you know, that he'll be there at number 25?
You know, I think he could because there's a good number of linebackers in this year's draft. It depends on the type of linebacker that teams are looking for. If they're looking for the smaller, swifter, get to point A to point B in a second type of guy, you're going with the Notre Dame linebacker. If you want the bigger, more physical, more forceful guy who is equally a three-down defender, you're going with Zaven Collins of Tulsa, who, in my opinion, could potentially be the most underrated defensive player in this year's draft.
All right, and that's where you went with the top pick in the third round. Again, a lot of people around here are not familiar with this guy. They haven't watched Tulsa play. What really sticks out about him, and is he more of a guy that could, you know, possibly come off the edge, whether it's a 3-4, or if they go back in pass situations to the traditional 4-3 defense?
In my opinion, Collins is a position-versatile, scheme-versatile type of linebacker. You can basically stick him in any scheme, at any position, at any linebacker position. You can put him in the middle. You can put him on the outside of a 3-4. You can put him on the outside of a 4-3. You know, before the days of the Roquan Smiths and those types of guys who were 6 foot, 6'1", 220 pounds, 200, you know, a safety size linebackers, if you will. You go back in the 80s and 90s, the Zaven Collins of the world, the guys who were 6'3", 245, 250 pounds, those were the coveted impact defensive players. And that is what I see Zaven Collins. Because if you watch Tulsa, number one, he's not a one-year wonder. He's been a terrific player the past couple of years for Tulsa. Mm-hmm. If you watch him, he was a forceful blitzer. He was a terrific run defender. He was also outstanding in coverage. So, I mean, he is a three-down defender that's got scheme versatility.
All right, we'll get to your last pick here in just a couple of moments. Last pick within the second round, going to Penn State to get a tight end. And obviously the Jaguars just added a position coach who came from Penn State, so their scouting's in with him. But I want to get to what I think are the second and third most important things that need to be addressed after they select Trevor Lawrence. That's left tackle, and that is defensive tackle. You didn't have any selections there in your top four. Is that because you believe this gets done in free agency?
Potentially. Obviously, you got to wait and see what happens with Cam Robinson. Are they going to bring him back, or what's going to happen there? Obviously, Robinson's probably going to want more money than he's actually going to get. I think a decision has to be made there. I also think that really when you get to where they are selecting, there are no pure left tackles. I like Jalen Mayfield. I don't think he's a pure left tackle. Jalen Mayfield of Michigan. I like Tevin Jenkins of Oklahoma State. I don't know that he's a pure left tackle. He actually played right tackle at Oklahoma State. I think he could slide over to left tackle. I think the wild card in the second round there, it could be Alex Leatherwood of Alabama, who's a pure left tackle, but he's got some holes in his game. He's not the nastiest of blockers. He's not a dominant run blocker. Fundamentally sounds, got a lot of upside, but I think he's also a guy that needs a boot in the rear end sometimes.
In my opinion, left tackle's become the weakest position in football. Yeah. You agree with that?
I don't know what you mean by weakest, but I'll say this. At a point in time, left tackles were such high priority. I mean, left tackles would go earlier than quarterbacks, and left tackle was the position, because if you could get a left tackle who could pass protect and run block, I mean, that set up your whole offense. I do think that they've been overlooked. I think they've been devalued. I think that teams in the past, you know, that they go all in on the quarterback, especially before the hard salary cap on rookies, and then they wouldn't protect him or they wouldn't get the left tackle in. I think that left tackle, you know, everybody loves the quarterback. And a quarterback is such a high priority position. I think the left tackle is as important on the offense. Granted, he's not handling the ball, but the left tackle has so much to do with to dictate what happens to the ball handler.
Tony Pauline, our guest. He is from Pro Football Network. He is our NFL draft analyst, joining Rick Ballew here on the home of the Jags, 1010 on the AM, 92.5 on the FM. The way I look at left tackle, they have four options. You mentioned re-signing Cam Robinson. They could string together here a deal and give up some picks to get Orlando Brown, who's only got, what, 13 career starts on the left side. They could overpay for a 33-year-old veteran, the three top-ranked free agents, or they could draft the young guy, and you just went through a couple. But the way I look at this, Tony, they can't miss here. When you're drafting Trevor Lawrence and you have all of the pressure on this man to turn around your franchise, they can't miss on left tackle.
You don't want to, and I agree with you. I think there will be some guys later on that they can roll the dice on, a Walker Little out of Stanford, someone who was tremendous as a freshman, had started off good as a sophomore before he was lost to a leg injury, decided to opt out. So with a guy like Walker Little, you're either going to get great value or you're going to get a guy who hasn't played football in 2 years and, you know, is going to look like it on the field. Carmen Jackson of Clemson, some people project him the guard. He was a darn good left tackle for, by the way, Trevor Lawrence at Clemson. So there will be some solid guys later on. I agree with you, you know, you can't miss. But, you know, after the Penei Sewells, after the Christian Darrisaws, I'm not a big believer in the kid from Northwestern, being Rashawn Slater being a very early pick. It tends to drop off, but, you know, are you taking, you're going to pass up on Trevor Lawrence for left tackle? Absolutely not.
Christian Barmore, you have going 17th to the Raiders. There's a lot of interest with him around here in SEC country. Your opinion on what he's done, and is this defensive tackle class really as weak as I keep hearing?
It's awful. It's absolutely awful. I mean, if Barmore goes that early, it's an absolute reach. I mean, he is an undersized kind of one-gap penetrator who explodes through the holes. He can rush the passer. He's very athletic. I don't know he's going to stand up all that well at the point of attack. When it comes to the run, my concern with the Jaguars taking another defensive lineman is just that. They're taking another defensive lineman on a unit that they have used so many first-round picks in the past. Josh Allen, Clavon Chazen, who I thought was out of position, Taven Bryan. Eventually, you got to just, you know, you got to roll with what you got and see what you have, because you keep drafting into one unit, one area, you're eventually going to develop holes in other areas.
Yeah, no doubt about that. With Urban Meyer, I just want to see speed, whether, you know, they add a guy like Curtis Samuel. Do they, you know, address that in the draft? I know there's a lot of interest around here in, you know, several different wide receivers who are going to be available, including Kadarius Toney, although he's not the fastest guy. He's got that quick twitch and the ability to make some people miss. You know, how hard is this for you when looking at Urban Meyer? We don't know his tendencies yet. We don't know what he wants to do or what his reputation is going to be as far as the draft, because he's never done it.
You know, you're right, and he's going to want to bring his players in. And, I mean, his players may not be guys that previously wore Ohio State Buckeye jerseys, as a lot of people project, a lot of people think. The fact is this is, you can't get too wrapped up with mock drafts. You can't get too wrapped up with draft day predictions, because what happens on draft day is just the start. So even if you don't like or you're not a fan of what Urban Meyer does on draft day, you got to give it time, because year after year we see drafts that look great in April that turn out to be garbage on the field.
Yeah.
So it's more about player, not just the players that you select in the draft, but how you develop those players.
Yep. Let's wrap it up with your final pick in the second round for Jacksonville, getting the tight end. Is it Pat Freiermuth? Is how you say it, I believe, out of Penn State, the tight end. They call him Baby Gronk. And, you know, the Jags have tried everything here. They've tried expensive free agents. They've tried to address it at times in the draft, albeit it has been a few years. This just appears to be a snake-bitten position for Jacksonville.
And I think because they've signed some high-priced free agents that really haven't panned out. I mean, you've got after Kyle Pitts, who is far and away the premier tight end in this draft, you do have some talent, but I think guys like Freiermuth, Brevin Jordan of Miami of Florida, Kenny Yeboah of Mississippi, they're more developmental guys. They are more guys who may take some time before they really progress into true three-down or every-down NFL tight ends. They'll show more flashes than consistent dominance as rookies in the NFL.
Outstanding. Make sure you get everything from Tony Paulinus. Go to profootballnetwork.com. He's got it all there as our NFL draft analyst. Tony, always a lot of fun. I do appreciate it. Hopefully we'll do it again before draft day.
Thanks for having me.
There he goes. Good stuff there. The chief draft analyst, Tony Pauline. And I enjoy his website. I enjoy his work. Boy, what a weak defensive tackle class. Very, very weak. You know, I'm like so many of you Jaguar fans, I spent so much of my time evaluating draft prospects, free agency prospects, and, you know, I'd just as soon take care of a defensive tackle this year through free agency. I would really like to do that. I'd almost like to take care of a tight end as well through free agency. You know, I know there's a lot of safety talk, but those are really the three positions. You know, a guy like Dalvin Tomlinson from New York is someone that I absolutely would like Jacksonville to take a look at. I also would like them to bring in Curtis Samuel, who's yet to ever catch for 1,000 yards in a season. I think they've used him wrong in Carolina. Although this year, you know, Matt Rhule and company actually had him with some inside handoffs. So all of a sudden you bring him in, you have a couple of guys you can do a lot of different things with. When you look at Curtis Samuel and you look at Laviska Shenault, you know, but how expensive is he going to be? You know, I think he had over 1,000 yards from the line of scrimmage this past year. So that's going to cost you a little bit. I'd like to see a tight end. You know, do you go Janu Smith? Do you go Hunter Henry? So those are really the three positions that I would like to see Jacksonville address. And we haven't even gotten to the biggest situation of all. What in the heck are they going to do at left tackle? Just don't know at this particular point. If I was a betting man, and I'm not, I think I would lean by the slightest of margin, maybe 51 to 49 right now, that they re-up with Cam Robinson. Now, I don't know that. This is just my gut telling me. But I'm not a big fan of giving him a long-term deal. I honestly don't think he's earned it, at least yet. All right, thank you to Tony Pauline. Appreciate him joining us. We're going to get to some regular NFL news, just in general. Alex Smith could be available in a couple of days. Does he make sense for the Jaguars? J.J. Watt to Arizona? More on the quarterback carousel. So we got a lot to dive into with the NFL. Best way for you to get a hold of us, do so on the text line. That's 641-1010. You can get me on Twitter, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010XL.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, let's bring in Robert Mays. Always great to talk NFL with Robert. He is with The Athletic, covers the National Football League. I'm Rick Ballou. This is the home of the Jags. Robert, how you doing?
Doing well. How you doing?
Man, you kidding me? It's beautiful here in Jacksonville. The weather's beautiful. I'm always in a good mood.
Great to hear.
Even though the hometown team has lost 15 in a row, I'm in a good mood. Yeah, that is troublesome, no doubt. But, you know, there's a little taste here in the air that, things are going to take a turn for the better with Urban Meyer and Trevor Lawrence. Alex Smith, you know, he said some comments last week. Now there's talk that he's going to be let go. Do you think that that makes sense here for Jacksonville? Would Alex Smith be the right guy to, you know, kind of be that mentor in that room with Brian Schottenheimer and Daryl Bevel and, Trevor Lawrence?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think you can draw several different lines as to why it would make sense. I mean, you look at the type of mentor he's been for players earlier in their career, whether it was Colin Kaepernick almost a decade ago, whether it's Patrick Mahomes in Washington, you know, what those guys in Washington, or excuse me, Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, what those guys in Washington said about him, and the Urban Meyer connection.
Yeah.
I mean, even if Urban Meyer wasn't there, it would make sense. But the fact that the guy who coached him in college and made him the number one pick happens to be the head coach in Jacksonville, I think it makes all the sense in the world for them to bring him in that role.
See, I think the backup quarterback is really important for, this young man. And it's nothing against Gardner Minshew, but he's getting ready to start his third year. He still believes he can play in this league. Do you want a guy that is out there trying to win that job every snap, or do you want a guy like Alex Smith or Andy Dalton, someone like that, who has done a lot of wonderful things in this league but understands his role now is to help out Trevor Lawrence in every way that he can?
I think you want the latter, for sure. And I think that guys that understand how to study, guys that can set the right example. Now, if you talk to people in Cleveland, they would tell you that bringing in Case Keenum was really important this year. It was really important for them to bring in somebody who was kind of similar to Baker Mayfield in a lot of ways, honestly. A little bit undersized, really productive in college with a certain type of offense. Really has kind of had to earn everything he got in the league as a player. And watching him study, I think, had an impact on just the way Baker Mayfield went about his business. A little bit different than when Drew Stanton was there earlier in Baker's career. So I do think that really matters when it comes to a young quarterback. By all accounts, Trevor Lawrence is a good guy. I mean, somebody who goes about it the right way, everything else. But it's a transition. And I think that anything you can do to ease that transition and get the most out of him at a reasonable price is worth exploring.
Gardner Minshew's a bargain. $850,000 will be his cap figure for the 2021 season. He's got more than 20 career starts. Do you think there'll be any draft day trade interest? Can Jacksonville get a sixth-round pick for Gardner Minshew?
I think they might be able to. I mean, we'll see what happens with the rest of the quarterback musical chairs, right? Is there anybody that feels like they're going to be left standing when things start to unfold that feels like they need a quarterback right now? I don't think anybody will give up a lot for him, but I do think that somebody might be in the market for a starter if they get a little bit desperate.
You know, we saw Tom Brady a year ago. I'm originally from Boston. I never thought he would leave. He did. We saw what happened with Tampa. Now, all of a sudden, you know, it's Deshaun Watson. It's Russell Wilson. What's going to happen with those two quarterbacks, in your opinion, when it's all said and done?
I think that Deshaun Watson gets traded. I don't think Russell Wilson does. I just think that once the timeline the Seahawks are on, and the other types of moves they've made, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. You know, when you trade two first-round picks for Jamal Adams, that's a move you make when you feel like you're close. That's a move you make near the end of your team-building process. If you were to trade Russell Wilson now for, you know, whatever, three first-round picks, whatever it might be, you're kind of restarting your clock in a way. I think that's the type of move you make if you want to do it 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And even if Russell Wilson's a little bit upset and he's not thrilled with what's going on there, I can't imagine he's somebody that would want to endure the public relations nightmare of holding out.
Yeah.
Deshaun Watson is an entirely different proposition today. I think he has every single bit of public goodwill on his side, and it really does feel like he's the sort of principled person that is going to sit back and say, I'm done, no thank you, trade me or I'm not showing up.
Yeah.
So I think that it may not be pretty. It may take a little while, but I do think that Watson gets moved, and I think that Russell Wilson ends up staying in Seattle.
Well, we saw the return on the situation with, how come I can think of his name right now, from Detroit,
Matt Stafford.
Yeah, out of Georgia, right down the road here. We saw the capital there that was involved. I mean, Deshaun Watson's met with the new staff. He says he doesn't want to have anything to do with them, and he's got a no-trade clause in his contract, which is a little bit alarming because he's going to have to list the teams he is willing to go to if Texas moves him. How do you think this process is going to play out with free agency 2 weeks away and, what, the NFL draft 7 Thursdays away?
I think that it's probably a move that is best made before the draft, because then one of the first round picks you'd be getting in exchange for Deshaun Watson, you know what it is. So if you're the Texans, for example, and you're looking at maybe a deal with Miami, you're getting Miami's third overall pick, which painfully is your pick, which, you know, that's a whole different story.
Right.
But you know you're getting a third overall pick. If you make this deal in September for Miami's 2022 first or 2023 first, all that, who knows where that ends up? Same with Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that the certainty of understanding we can get, in Miami's case, a top three pick, in Carolina's place, in Carolina's case, a top eight pick, and maybe when you trade for Deshaun Watson, you have a ready-made chance to find your successor to Deshaun Watson, I think that changes the calculus a little bit. So I think that the certainty associated with those picks may spur the Texans on to try to do this a little bit earlier.
Robert Mays, our guest, he is with The Athletic, covers the National Football League. Is it going to be Jameis Winston in New Orleans?
It does seem like it's trending in that direction. You know, it just feels like it makes the most sense for them in terms of knowing him. He's been in the building. He understands the offense. They could probably get him as a reasonable price. And, you know, unless they're a team that goes out and makes a splashy move, which they are want to do. I mean, they've made plenty over the years. I think that he just, I don't know, all signs point to that being the one that's the most logical endpoint.
Yeah. J.J. Watt, boy, this one really snuck up on me. I didn't see him going to Arizona. Were you surprised by this particular move today?
I was, just because all the other teams that he'd been connected to were kind of ready-made contenders. Arizona, you could argue, is a team on the way up, but they're not a team that's ready to compete for a Super Bowl right now. They would have to have a lot of things break their way over the course of one offseason, where a team like the Browns, a team like the Bills, so I think they're definitely one or two pieces away from making a serious run at this thing. So in that way, it is a little bit surprising, but it seems like those teams might not have been in a position to offer him a deal like this.
Yeah.
You know, if you're clean to make all as much sense to, you know, make that sort of big play for him, I don't think it necessarily does.
We're in day six of no tags. There's some talk around here that maybe Cam Robinson could be tagged. You know, Trent Williams, I guess in his contract, he can't be tagged in San Francisco. But, you know, that's all the rage here with the assumption that Trevor Lawrence is in. Do the Jaguars re-sign Cam Robinson at left tackle, try to address this in free agency, or wait for the NFL draft? What's your opinion on what becomes such an important move because he's there to protect the blind side of Trevor Lawrence?
I think that it does. It's an important consideration. And, you know, what do you do with that if you don't end up getting someone in the free agent market? I've always been a big fan of trying to make sure that you connect that move with your quarterback. I almost think it's similar to move that other teams have made where you draft a receiver and have that spot be solved when you have your quarterback, similar to what the Bengals did last year with T. Higgins and Joe Burrow. We saw that happen with the Bengals and Andy Dalton and A.J. Green at one point. So, and I think the one case with the left tackle that I think jumps out to me would be when I think it was Matt Ryan and Sam Baker back in like 2008 that the Falcons did that in one fell swoop. And I think that the Jags would be smart to do that. You know, if they don't get somebody on the market, if you draft Lawrence at one, is there somebody, I can't remember where the Rams pick is, but in like 23, 24,
yep,
that you feel good about it. And if you can come away with that, I think that's a pretty attractive haul.
Yeah. And, you know, this offseason is going to be nuts. I think, you know, almost daily, if not certainly weekly, we're going to see high profile guys let go because teams are trying to get under the salary cap.
Yeah. I wonder how high profile they're going to be or how many teams are going to say, we just need to bite the bullet for 1 year. You know, the cap is going to bounce back next season.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a guy you really want to keep, are you willing to kind of push money into future years and maybe play with your accounting with methods that you previously wouldn't have used? So I think that there's going to be a little bit of a crunch. I think that teams are going to try to save money at luxury spots, whether it's a third pass rusher or, you know, an additional receiver. You know, teams like the Saints, for example, who are top eight in spending at pretty much every single position group, that's not going to be feasible anymore.
Yeah.
You're going to have to cut costs a little bit more than that. But if I think with certain types of players, you know, those tier one, tier two type guys, I think teams are going to do what they can to keep players like that. And I think that free agents at the top of the market are still going to get paid, even when you consider some of the limitations the teams are going to have financially.
All right, final question for you, Robert. A lot of talk here, the return of Allen Robinson. I think Chicago personally is going to put a tag on him. I also want a more explosive wide receiver. I want, with Urban Meyer, I want speed. And, you know, the reports I've seen, $18 to $20 million per year for Allen Robinson. So I'm staying away. I want to ask you about Curtis Samuel, who ran a 4.31 when he came out of Ohio State. Your interest, what do you believe it is with Samuel and Urban Meyer here? And what do you think it's going to cost to get Curtis Samuel?
I think he's a really interesting player when you think about where the market kind of falls. We were just talking about him today on our show. You know, where, who would you even compare him to in guys that have hit the market and gotten paid? He has this kind of gadgety skill set that's really interesting. He spent about 75% of his snaps in the slot last year. I don't know how much sense he would make for a team like the Jags. You know, you have Laviska Shenault, who you drafted last year fairly high, that I think fills a pretty similar role to what you'd expect from Curtis Samuel in any given offense. And I just think that with receivers, the number one thing you have to think about when you're constructing a receiving core is complementary skill sets. How do the pieces fit together and how diverse are those skill sets? So I think somebody is going to talk themselves into Samuel for the reasons that you said, athleticism, all the different ways you can use him. I just don't know if Jacksonville is necessarily the right team, because if I'm looking at what they need, I think they need a true outside threat, even if it is somebody with a little bit more speed, but just somebody on the outside that can play that way.
Interesting. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. Always good talking with you, Robert. We'll do it again soon.
Sounds good.
There he goes, Robert Mays, joining us from The Athletic. He is an NFL writer there. All right. Part of my thinking here with Samuel is there's a real issue here at wide receiver with the Jaguars. And, you know, I'm trying to be realistic in my thinking. Shenault gets hurt all the time. He got hurt in Colorado, and he had several different injuries here. Now, he's a tough guy. He played through a lot of injuries. But it doesn't erase the fact that he gets injured all the time. And to me, that is part of the process here. I think you also have to look in what is going to be a contract year number four for DJ Chark, another young man who gets injured. I mean, what did he miss, 9 games as a rookie? And he just was not himself last year. Okay, he had different injuries, and there was something missing. I mean, it was obvious. All he had to do was really, you know, I remember the first time that I met DJ Chark and having conversations with him as a rookie in his second year. I mean, just a, you know, mild-mannered, very respectful, almost unassuming at times when he was around the media. I mean, it was pretty contagious. It was pretty cool. And we didn't get the opportunity this year to go in the locker room and do those type of things because of COVID. But it just appeared to me that something was off. And I don't know if it was the play calling of Jay Gruden. I don't know if it was the quarterback play of Gardner Minshew. I don't know if it was the combination of both. But I got a feeling that he was really frustrated. And he had some nagging injuries. You can't overlook that. It's not fair. You just can't overlook it. If you're writing down Jaguar wide receivers right now, you have to put at least a partial question mark next to DJ Chark and Laviska Shenault. You have to. There's no way. If not, you're fooling yourself. That's what I'm trying to get at here. And I love them both. I do. I think they got freak ability. I don't think they used Shenault right last year. We saw it in the last game of the year when he caught the big ball, when he caught the long ball. He may have the ability to burn downfield. They didn't use him the right way. It doesn't matter who the offensive coordinator is. Jacksonville doesn't use their wide receivers the right way. Hell, I remember a couple years ago when they had Dante Moncrief running fades. I mean, how do you Who draws that play up? A fade for Dante Moncrief? Whatever. My point is, they have to get a couple of wide receivers. I don't want to overpay for Keelan Cole. I think best case scenario, he's your fourth wide receiver. I expect them to do it here either in the draft or in free agency. You know, Kenny Golladay is a guy that I am very interested in. Worked with Daryl Bevel in Detroit. Is that a possible link there? I know Allen Robinson is immensely popular here. And I like Allen Robinson an awful lot, but I don't want to overpay for a guy who, in my opinion, is a little bit better than a possession receiver. Allen Robinson's not a deep threat. Allen Robinson's not a burner. Now, Allen Robinson has never had a quarterback. Hell, he left here and the quarterback play got worse in Chicago. So maybe that's a little bit unfair. And that 1 year in 17, him and Blake Bortles got together, had a hell of a year. And we remember that. But I know that's not popular. I'm staying away from Allen Robinson. Certainly with the amount of money he is going to command. Just my opinion. Let's get yours. 641-1010, that is the number if you'd like to get on in. Also on Twitter, you can get me, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, 1010, XL.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Sometimes the pressure just boils my blood. Things I can't control. Then again, could I have controlled it? I'm kind of saying the same thing. Kind of like when I say I hate all the hate. Don't get upset about what you can't control. Could you have controlled it, Ballou? That's the question you got to ask yourself.
To control or not to control? I don't know what would go after that.
Sad weekend, the passing of Herb Cross, 81. What a life. Grew up watching him. Brent Musburger, who was on earlier today with Frank and company. Jimmy the Greek. Phyllis George, who I believe passed around a year or so ago, right? I don't want to kill off folks. But he was a trailblazer in the world of broadcasting. Certainly as an African-American. One of the very first with NFL Today. Very good life, 81 years of age. So that means... that leaves just Brent Musburger. I mean, Jimmy the Greek Schneider died a long, long time ago. And, you know, Irv Cross over the weekend. I'm just going to look up Phyllis George. I don't like when I do this. I don't want to assume that someone is dead if, in fact, they are alive. Yeah, she died May 14th, 2020. I thought she died a year ago. And she had a nice long life. Let's see. Phyllis George, another pioneer in the business. Oh, she actually passed fairly early at the age of 70. So, hated to hear the news in town here with Lewis Nix, the 29-year-old, former Notre Damer, played here at Reigns, had a cup of coffee with the Jags, but he was a third-round draft pick by Houston. Still don't know everything that, you know, went into the story. But apparently they found his vehicle in a pond, and it's just heartbreaking. 29 years of age, his whole life ahead of him. Really sad to hear about that. So let's hope things start to get better here in the month of March. It just seems like, you know, on a daily basis or a weekly basis, we're getting more and more bad news. You know, I said at the top of the show an hour ago, I really do like what the tours did, particularly the PGA Tour, but I don't want to neglect or overlook in the other tours, their respect for Tiger Woods was, I thought, just phenomenal. With the egos of these players and what have you, to see that amount of respect that was given was pretty cool. And the, you know, the interview with Colin Morikawa after he won yesterday in Bradenton was pretty deep. You know, he just lost his grandfather to COVID, but to come out and say what he said about Tiger Woods was, to me, it was heartwarming. It was good. It was a good way to kind of, you know, wrap up the Sunday, if you will, as far as sports. And it's going to be a great month here along the PGA Tour with the Florida Swing well underway. Arnold Palmer's event this weekend, an event that Tiger has won, I want to say, 8 times. And then, of course, the week after, they come here to beautiful Ponte Vedra. Let's just hope the weather is like today. You can get 4 days of this. What a great week out there. And I know it's a tough ticket now. What are they going to sell, like 20, 25% compared to the way it's always been? I saw the numbers today in Florida. They were very promising. It was like the lowest numbers I've seen. You know, I check it most days. I just got it on the phone and I go. But I saw today it was like 1,700 cases today, which is still, oh, by the way, I mean, still a large amount of people, but, I mean, down considerably. Let me look at this one more time to see if it's still there or that they might have taken it down. Yeah, 1,700 today in the state of Florida. That's real good. So, you know, hopefully the numbers are starting to look better. The vaccine getting in, you know, more involved for people here. But, you know, I'm just going to come out and say it anyway, because I don't think I'm offending anyone. But, you know, I was out on Saturday night, and I got after it big time in St. Augustine, out with the GF and out with a couple of buddies of mine. I mean, you wouldn't even know that there's a pandemic in St. Augustine. You wouldn't even know. And I'm not ripping it. I'm just saying. I mean, I was in a place where the waiters and the waitresses aren't even wearing a mask. Okay? It's one thing for the patrons to not wear one. But, you know, I talked to people in different parts of the country. You know, I got buddies in California. I got buddies in Ohio. I got buddies back in Boston. I mean, there's certain places where, man, it is shut down. You know, I went Sarasota and out there by Bradenton and Fort Myers and where else did I go? Naples. I did that. Before that, I was considering, you know, kind of doing the, because I haven't done it for forever, I was, you know, thinking about doing the Fort Walton, Destin, you know, down towards Pensacola, and then we were going to continue to go and go to New Orleans for a couple of days, okay? This is going back, you know, 3 weeks ago when I took a vacation.
Right.
So I talked to Tim Brando, who, happy birthday, Tim, turned 65 yesterday. The great Tim Brando. But I talked to him, and then I talked to some others, and, you know, restaurants that I know of, bars that I know of on Bourbon Street, I started calling around. 3/4 of them are shut down. They're not even open.
The mom and pop shops.
Right. Now, they changed it. I believe things started to get better in February. You know, all the bars and taverns and restaurants up and down Bourbon Street. You go to New Orleans, you know, here's the deal about New Orleans. You want to go for about a 48-hour period, and then that's it. It's like Las Vegas. You just got to get the hell out of there.
So it stinks after a while.
Too much of anything is bad for you.
Right.
A couple of days worth on Bourbon Street is enough, especially now at my age. I mean, I used to go all the time when I was at Florida State. I mean, hell, I used to go over there for Florida State Tulane football games.
Florida State Tulane.
Tulane now, okay? Florida State LSU, Sugar Bowls, Super Bowls, Mardi Gras. I don't even like jazz. I went to a jazz festival. I mean, any excuse to go to New Orleans is great. When you're younger like that and you're running and you're ripping, you know, that's one thing. You can bounce back the next day. It's hard. When you don't turn 50, folks. It's hard. But we were considering doing that because New Orleans also has some of the greatest food you'll find anywhere.
I heard that.
But we were told that Bourbon Street was like basically shut down. And I'm like, well, then forget about that. Plus, it was cold. It was cold here in Jacksonville. It would certainly have been cold, you know, down the Fort Walton, Destin area towards New Orleans. So I elected to go the other way. But, hey, you know, Mardi Gras. Started in late February. We'll go now through the early parts of March. Absolutely. Fat Tuesday. And what a month this is. One of the great months of the year. All right. Let's grab a call here before the break. Why don't we do that? Start to get you involved in the show. Getting a lot of feedback, as always, on the text line, 641-1010. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing great. A little bit down about Irv Cross. I read his book about 3 or 4 years ago. Trivia question for you. You know the name of it?
I don't.
Burying the Cross.
Really?
Burying the Cross, yeah. And
Is it a good book?
Phenomenal. It's a good read. I know you're an avid reader, so I recommend you pick it up.
Well, I will. I'm always looking for a good book, and I felt like I've almost read them all sports related, but I have a feeling this probably goes some places that are pretty deep.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You'll enjoy it. I'm not going to spoil it for you. One more thing, Bearing the Cross, Tiger, you know, I broke my foot about 5 months ago. It's the mental aspect that he has to get over. The physical, you'll heal. I mean, maybe it's not to the level that you want, but the physical, mental aspect that ties into not being able to get up and go to the bathroom anytime you want really affects you. And I'm praying for him. I'm praying for you. I want you, in honor of Tiger, to bring back the fantasy foursome and a beer cart girl. Please. I love you.
All right, take care. I tell you what, if the Players moves back to May, I will. Because I need me some sundresses. I mean, it's a great week for Jacksonville. There's like elegance. There's class. You know? Southern Bells. Depending on my mood, I can go any way with you on this. I mean, I can do all sorts of different things. I can't stand country music. I loathe it. But some of those shows are pretty good, particularly when the girls put on those boots and the Daisy Dukes and the cowboy hat, and they drop the V-neck a little bit, and it's you! To have a fun time. Well, those same women during the Players, it's like, oh, it's Let's Get Classy a week. And who can outdo the next one with the most gorgeous sundress that you could ever possibly imagine? And in a word, spectacular. It's the greatest week of the year here in Jacksonville. But now it's in March, and we just can't trust we can't trust the weather. And if it's like today, we're going to be fine. Okay, we just don't know. We'll see. And, you know, I guess you can look ahead, right? I'm not a look-ahead weather guy. I don't trust it anyway. I mean, I went to bed last night. They said it was a 44% chance that it was going to rain. 44% chance. I woke up first thing in the morning, went over to Glen Kernan for a charity golf tournament. There wasn't a speck of rain in the air. It was perfect.
Well, welcome to Florida, man. Sometimes it rains for 20 minutes, then it stops and it's hot. Sometimes it's like today, and it's a beautiful day. I don't know why I wore all black, but I did. And, you know, it's Florida. I'm still not used to it. I've been here for 6 years now. I'm still not used to this.
Yeah. Now, I mean, if it works, it's great. We'll see. I wish it was a little bit spread apart. I hate the Players because I don't hate the Players. I hate the Players during March because there's just so much more going on, you know, with conference tournaments and then the NCAA college basketball tournament. It appears that this year, I mean, you got the end of the regular season wrapping up this week. So it's going to go head-to-head with conference tournaments, which is better than the NCAA tournament. There's no doubt that that's better. So, yeah, they do avoid that. But I mean, I remember back in 90, my first year here was Elkington in 97 when he won it. Then it was Justin Leonard in 98. Duval won in 99. Back then, they had it going head-to-head. You had a Final Four down in St. Petersburg.
Up against the players?
Up against the players.
Like, same days and, like...
Exactly.
Ooh, gosh.
And you had them going head... I mean, that's just... Some people will say that we're a one-horse town. Well, all of a sudden, you dropped a couple of other horses on us. I think the Gators might have gone to the Final Four that year or something. I don't remember. I mean, it was 1999, March of 99. But David Duval wins here. I think he was the only golfer in red figures. He was at like, I think he won at like 2 under or 3 under. And you had this incredible basketball going on at the exact same time. It was just, it was brutal.
You have to kind of think about which one would you rather watch. But, I mean, you know, for a person who's never been to the Players like myself, I mean, I'd love to go to the Players. I like watching basketball at home unless, you know, I have tickets. But, I mean, it seems like the Players is a great experience. Although we're complaining a little bit about the Players this year and it being in March, it doesn't look like anything's really going up against it. You'll have the NIT on March 16th. The NBA All-Star Game, which is weird, is going to be on March 7th. You got the 11th through the 14th of the Players, so I feel like it all works out in the end.
I love hanging out with you. You just are able to just put a tremendous picture on everything. Next, you're going to tell me they're going to be all in sundresses.
The NBA Players?
No! The Players Championship, the NBA. I didn't say that. Don't put words in my mouth.
I don't know what you meant, like, with nice picture, like all of them are going to be in sundresses. I didn't know what you meant.
You're a very smart guy. You couldn't figure that out?
No.
All right. Folks, help out RJ, will you? Get him on the text line, 641-1010.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Just love seeing all these highlights. The Cactus League underway. The Grapefruit League. Still upset with Arizona for pillaging our state. Taking baseball away. At least they're playing. You know, a lot of these players don't want to play. I'm not even going to waste time talking about that, but you know, these players know how to complain, okay? You should only complain when you lose. That's it, as far as I'm concerned. It's really the only time I complain. Right? Team loses. All right, let's get to you. Right, a lot on here. My goodness. Let's see, the 1,000 says, Billy. You think Colin Johnson is the guy that can transition into a role as a pass-catching tight end? I don't. I don't think he's big enough. You know, what is he soaking wet? 220 pounds? Now, he's a young man. I've already stated that with Trevor Lawrence, who weighed in at 213 pounds, once he matures, I think Trevor Lawrence will end up being a, you know, 225, 230-pound quarterback. You can take and say the same thing here about Colin Johnson. I think Colin Johnson has a chance to be a real weapon for the Jaguars if they have the right quarterback, and it appears they're going to get him in Trevor Lawrence. I mean, he's 6'6", and you know, most corners are anywhere from 5'9", 5'9 and a half to 6'1". You use him in the right situation. He led the team last year an average of 15.1 yards per. And look at that. He only caught 18 balls, 18 of 31. That's actually a pretty bad percentage. But he averaged 15.1 a reception. I mean, again, look at this football team. It was all dink and dunk. Chark, 13-3. Conley, 11-8. Cole, 11-7. Godwin, 10-7. He only caught three balls. Chenault, 10-3. those aren't good numbers. Westbrook, he only caught one ball for 4 yards. To me, again, and that was a very frustrating part of all this. You're losing 15 straight games, and they're not even throwing deep balls. You know, they're dinking and dunking underneath routes. No, you're losing. Throw the football downfield. Again, they don't have a quarterback. Oh, okay. You're right. Well, they're going to have a quarterback this year. I don't think so with Colin Johnson. I think he's got a real chance. I do. I like him. Year of growth. Let's see here. 33-71 says, Bo, the only basketball player that could have won a certain of us would have been Dennis Rodman. Yeah, when he on the cover of Sports Illustrated in a dress. Was Ricky Williams in a dress on Sports Illustrated with Mike Ditka?
According to James, yes.
Okay. Some dudes look good in a dress. Ricky Williams, Dennis Rodman.
Wasn't, I don't know if this is true or not, was Marv Albert in a dress?
No.
Okay.
Marv wasn't in a dress, but Marv used to like to bite women in the back in hotel rooms.
I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole.
Well, Marv had to be in that position because he didn't want the ladies of the night to pull the squirrel off his head.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know until like a couple years ago he's been wearing a wig.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know.
Famous toupee.
I was today years old. The same thing with Steve Harvey. I didn't know that was a wig all those years.
Oh, I didn't know Steve Harvey was a wig.
Yeah.
Ted Danson of Cheers wore a wig.
We've been lied to for so long by these people.
Fake. I mean, there's a lot of that out there. Just a little nip here, a little tuck. Maybe I'll get my stomach stapled. Maybe I'll do that. Maybe if I can get that sponsored. Baloo for a stomach staple.
That may be tomorrow night's poll question.
Yeah, I've known a few people that, I'm not making light of this, had the stomach staple and didn't work, and they didn't cut back on their calories. And when you have your stomach ripped in half, you better quit the calories.
I mean, let's see. Lavelle Crawford is a famous comedian. He had the gastric bypass. And I think one big radio DJ for iHeart, Big Boy out of L.A.
Big Boy!
Yes, sir. Yeah. Okay, yeah, you know, okay, yeah.
Dude, just because I'm 50-something,
well, I mean,
doesn't mean
you
I don't know.
In L.A., I didn't know. I mean, Power 106,
dude,
man.
I used to run L.A. I used to be number one in Compton when I was on AM 1540, the home of the Trojans.
Word up. But, yeah, like, he had the same surgery, and, yeah, he says he can only eat, like, you know, the size of, like, a cup almost, so.
Inglewood in the house, I used to say that.
From Chicago?
Sacramento all up in this. I used to say that.
Rick was going off.
2005 says, hey, Rick, I believe Urban will do whatever it takes to trade up for Kyle Pitts. Also pick up another receiver in free agency of the draft. The value on Kyle Pitts is exploding. Is absolutely exploding. And you're going to have to give up so much to move to get him. So I think that's a pipe dream. I also do firmly believe that position is not worthy of the pick, if that makes any sense. I mean, tight ends and guards and safeties and linebackers should drop, in my opinion. But maybe they believe he's going to be a Kelce. Maybe they believe he's going to be a Gonzalez. Phenomenal talent. Incredible talent. And would you give up 25 and 33 to get Pitts? Would you give up 2 for 1? It's a fair question. Chances are not all these picks are going to work. I mean, you've got 1, you've got 25, you've got 33, you got 45. Would you give up 25 and 33 to move into the top 10 to get Pitts? 2 for 1. What if that 2-for-1, you could get a Kadarius Toney, you could get, I don't know, highest ranked Zavon Collins, linebacker tonight, Tony Pauline told us about, out of Texas, or you get the tight end and Pat Freiermuth out of Penn State. Don't know the answer to these particular questions. The 50-72 Blue, now with J.J. Watt gone out of the division, we just need Derrick Henry gone. Yes, yeah, J.J. Watt's not nearly the player he once was. I'm actually very surprised he got $31 million over the next 2 years. My only question with Derrick Henry is how much longer can he do this? And I know that this man has defied, you know, all the odds. And what he's been able to do is just incredible. But let me look at touches last year for Derrick Henry. So let me look this up real quick before the break here. Let's see. Derrick Henry just turned 27 in January. Derrick Henry this year carried the football 378 times. That is wear, that is tear, people pulling and prodding. And, tough guy. Incredibly tough guy. But look at his carry since he was drafted. When he was a rook in 2016, he had 110 carries. Boy, these numbers are insane. Every year, Derrick Henry, his carries have gone up. His average per carry has gone up. And his touchdowns have gone up. Listen to these numbers. 110 for 490 as a rookie, an average of 4.5. 176 for 744 his sophomore year. Yes, I said a sophomore. 4.2. So I went down a little bit. Third year in the NFL, 215 carries, 1,059 yards, an average of 4.9. 2019, 303 carries, 1,540 yards, an average of 5.1. Last year, 378 carries, 2,027 yards, an average of 5.4. So his average per carry has gone 4.9, 5.1, 5.4. His overall yardage has gone 1,059 to 1,540 to 2027. RJ, his touchdowns have gone from 12, 16 to 17.
Well, are you now in fear or not? I mean, not us. I mean, I feel like we would like this, but should Tennessee fans be worried that this guy is going to run himself into the ground at some point and it's all going to go downhill from there for the Titans?
I'm not a fan of a big contract for any tailback. I mean, how did it work out for David Johnson? How did it work out for Todd Gurley? How's it working out right now for Zeke Elliott? How's it working out for these top? It's like, you know, what could happen to Barkley last year? And I know he's still in his rookie deal. I don't wish evil on him, even though he is with the, I guess, evil empire within the AFC South. He's too likable of a guy. I don't ever want to see anyone go out with an injury. But, brother, when you're carrying the ball 378 times, he also caught 19 footballs. He had nearly 400 touches this year. 400? I mean, seriously. My money says he's only going to be able to do that for a couple of more years. You know, you hope that Trevor Lawrence is a starting quarterback here for 15, 20 years. In my opinion, Derrick Henry is only going to be able to do this for, let's say, somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 to 3, maybe 5 years. You know what happens to backs when they go north of 30. Now, there are exceptions. Adrian Peterson's still getting it done. Frank Gore is still getting it done. But all of these other backs, I mean, look what happened to Shady McCoy. Look what's happened to Todd Gurley. Look at Le'Veon Bell. DeMarco Murray. I mean, Le'Veon Bell held out a couple of years ago. That's money he'll never get back. And the whole debacle from Pittsburgh to New York, heck, he's not even getting an opportunity. They're going with, you know, an undrafted Williams, and they're going with the rookie out of LSU in Hilaire. If they're, you know, outside of quarterback, it feels like, man, when your time is up at running back, your time is up. We saw it here with Maurice Jones-Drew. We saw it here with Fred Taylor. When your time is up, your time is up at that position. So, oh, he's in his prime now. Absolutely. He's only 27. But this isn't going to be a Tom Brady deal where, you know, you're in your mid to late 30s, and in Brady's case, he's 43 now. No. That's why the fact that Frank Gore has defied all odds is incredible. But Frank Gore is very, 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 you know, very average right now, very pedestrian right now. He deserves a lot of credit. He scored that huge touchdown and got some big first downs when the Jets won that game, put the Jaguars in at number one. So, you know, around here, he'll always be loved for that. All right, final thoughts coming up. We'll go tonight till 8, Sports Den. We'll join you then. My name is Rick Ballew. This is Into the Night.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Getting a lot of recommendations now, people telling me to go surf and look for so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and sundresses. Love our listeners. You tell me to do something, damn it, I'm going to do it. Thank you to truckcrashlaw.com. Not really time tonight for news and notes because I overshot the runway. But I do want to let you know that in the world of defensive driving, it's terrible out there. Accidents all the time. You got to be on the defensive. You do. You got to be like a safety, single high. No one gets behind you. Because you're trying to do your job and go from point A to point B, and then you got so-and-so. What are you doing tonight? What's going on? Where's the party? You're texting. That's his life. There are accidents. They're awful. They're fatal, serious injuries. If you're aware of this and it happens because of a truck, a tractor trailer, an RV, a bus, anything big like that, please get to their family, the name truckcrashlaw.com. The number one, it's because it's all that they do, and they're the only folks in the entire state of Florida who do this full time. They don't dive in anything else. This is what they do. It's why they're so good. Joe Camerlengo and his law firm. That is truckcrashlaw.com. I hope you never have to call them. It's the only time I've ever done a commercial for a business where I hope you don't have to call them. Because I don't want to see anyone get hurt. 52-65. Believe you said it best. Pitts is an unbelievable talent. Trade 25 and 33 to get him. Re-sign Chark. Get Orlando Brown or Trent Williams and let's shock the world. All right, Trent Williams is going to be pricey. We'll see if San Francisco lets him go. To get Orlando Brown, you're going to have to trade, and it may take 25 or 33, if not at least one of those picks. I had a couple of guests on last week. One said a second rounder this year, a third round next year. You're going to have to pay Brown. You're going to have to give him top money. I don't know how I feel about Orlando Brown. He's a big, big, big. He's enormous. I mean, he's 6'8", 355 right now. That 355 is about 375, 380. And I've heard there are some limitations with him as far as his feet, his movement. I don't know why, but that just feels to me like it could be a disaster at left tackle. Feels like it could be a Luke Jokel disaster at left tackle. Maybe wrong. I don't know. But it's going to cost you. No doubt about that. The capital to get him. You want to give up these picks. Remember, you can make some trades. You can add some free agents. There's only two ways you're going to win in this league. Number one, you got to find your quarterback. Number two, you got to build it through the draft. Young guys, inexpensive guys, re-sign your players. That's how teams win. the Tom Brady, Gronk, Leonard Fournette, Antonio Brown thing, that was a mirage. That almost never happens. 8107, Blue, you wouldn't pick Big Marv. Got to believe you're talking about Marv Wilson here out of Florida State. There's no way I'm going anywhere near Big Marv early in the draft with these top four picks. You know, 1, 25, 33, 45. He's not even on my board. This guy's got some serious questions, man, including effort, including technique. If you could get him late, okay. I mean, he's got a chance. He was, a number one. He was a preseason All-American. You go back to all those mocks a year ago, he was on the, he was a first-round guy. But I just believe, times have fallen for him. I would not invest high. And we did hear tonight Tony Pauline say, man, it's by far the weakest position in the draft. 25-96 is Blue. Anywhere in the backup quarterback? No, not really. There's a lot of rumors that, Alex Smith could come here if he is let go by the Washington football team. Personally, I think putting him in a room with Trevor Lawrence and with Brian Schottenheimer and Daryl Bevel, I'd love it. I'd love a veteran like that. Alex Smith, Tyrod Taylor, Andy Dalton. That's the type of guy I want. So then against Gardner Minshew, Minshew's getting ready for his third year. He thinks he can still play in this league. Not to say that Taylor, Smith, and Dalton don't believe they can play in this league. Fitzpatrick doesn't believe they can play in this league. But I think they'd be better mentors because they're all in their mid to late 30s. I guess the youngest of the group would be Ty Taylor. Gardner Minshew is a bargain, man. He's going to be an $850,000 cap hit. That is on the cheap. I think there'll be some interest in Gardner Minshew. Even though this is a strong quarterback class, I wouldn't be surprised if Jacksonville could move him and get a sixth-round pick. All right, another day in, another day we get closer to the NFL draft. Another day we get closer to the free agency period as well in the National Football League.
Now, the 2-minute drill on 1010XL.
All right, James Coleman is here.
What's good, man?
Everything is good. Everything is good. When the sun is shining, I'm a happy guy.
That's true. It ain't shining very much right now. It's been raining. It's like we're going to get a lot of rain.
Really? I haven't been outside in a couple of hours. Well, that's too bad. Today was nice, though.
Yeah. For the most part, it was. It was good. Mm-hmm. Beautiful early day. They had a little rain this morning.
Yep.
Then it kind of cleared up, so we're getting them hot temperatures, but I think it's supposed to cool down, so who knows? This one, our weather's helter-skelter.
I was up way too early this morning.
Yeah, why? For nighttime radio guy, man.
I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight. I think I'm going to go three fingers deep right now. I've been on to the Tullamore Dew as of late. It's working.
Man, it always helps.
Yeah.
It always helps, man, so... What's been going on, man? I got a 2-hour massage today, so I don't even know what's going on with the sports world today. That's entirely felt great, entirely too long. I felt like I was
I need to spend more money on that because I don't mind spending for entertainment. I don't mind spending for feel good. But I'm always like, I need a massage, and then I just never end up doing it. I need to start taking advantage of that because I feel tight right now.
Yeah,
I feel like I need to loosen up a little bit.
Self-care, man.
The way we
have to go out here, sacrifice our minds and bodies for the people. We got to do what we got to do.
Absolutely. And the job is so incredibly stressful, especially when you people like say nasty things. I don't know about, I won't speak for you, James. When people say nasty things about me, it really freaks me out and my whole body goes tense.
Yeah, man. It really hurts when people say nobody's listening to your show as they're listening to your show. Say, well, if they're obviously they don't have high self-esteem because they say they're nobody.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, man.
We love them all. I don't care if you like or dislike. All I care about is that you do listen.
Gotta listen, man. So sports and more sports. We're in March. March Madness round around the corner. What's your favorite? Now we got March Madness coming on, so this is a good month with sports. What's your favorite sports month?
Mine is October.
Okay, I see. Football's getting in the
October,
swing.
Then September, then probably November. I'm heavy there, but March for a lot of people would be number one.
Yeah. I think this is an anniversary coming up for Denny getting, you know, making sure that, you know, there are no more Denny's coming out. Like they said, that's one of the most popular holidays is when the start of the tournament.
All getting snipped.
Yeah, so then you just put your bags of peas on yourself. And you sit there and you just watch basketball all day.
I went through it. It's a painful 48-hour plus.
One thing I can promise process. The people is we won't talk basketball more than likely, but we're gonna talk J.J. Watt, his contract. We'll talk about backup quarterback situation. A lot of people are interested in that. Who better to talk about backup quarterbacks or quarterbacks in general than a one Denny Thompson? And we got some interesting 8 o'clock things that are going on. One MFTK moment in history for me, and then something around that same ilk. You know, taking it too far as you know these colleges and the announcements and stuff that's going on. So
what's going on with 5-star U right now?
Man, we're cooking, man.
5-star U.
We are cooking.
What
I talked
happened?
About this in so. Man, I might want to. That's an interesting.
You
want to
say for you want to say for your show, say for your show
because I know, but
I'm loving what I mean.
But what I can say, and I'll say it on the show too, is that this was why people were critical a year ago. It's because you know he can do it. You heard about the organization. You heard about that stuff. But the built-in, I just don't like excuses, man. I don't want to hear COVID. I don't want to hear you got to build relationships. I don't want to hear you got to put a product on the field because obviously the product on the field stunk. Mm-hmm. And now you're going out there. But these guys with Bartow coming from they used to be a rivals guy, coming from Syracuse. He's very connected. Got him organized a lot more in the recruiting side. They got a lot more energy. And, you know, that kid Hunter from that's actually from Florida but lives up in the Atlanta area. He's just an electric guy that's like he's your Greg Reed type player. That's telling everybody, hey, we're going to bring this back. You're going to come play or you're going to get beat. And it sounds funny to, you know, everyday Joes who are watching Florida State get dismantled by rivals, but it has to start somewhere and it's cyclical. So that and there were some things that I'll put it this way. Some rivals made some mistakes and we capitalized on it. So we'll talk – if we get into that, we'll definitely talk about where fans have to understand you got to – you got to just watch. You got to understand. Like you're not involved in the everyday process, and things happen. And hey, the ball bounces on the ground. It pops. The fumble goes to you. You got to pick it up and go out skiing and score 6. And that's what Florida State's doing in recruiting right now.
I mean, and I am really surprised and impressed by what has gone on here. I mean, considering what they did this year during the regular season, both the December and February signing day, and then you know what they've done after. I know it's all non-binding at this point. 2022, 2023.
It's better than not. Now you have to go and you do what you need to do. Coaching, don't get.
They
got to
win a couple of games.
Don't get embarrassed. Get set. I've said this from jump, and people said this about Taggart, and this is the greatness of the brand. 7 to 8 wins in Tallahassee right now in this climate.
Yeah.
Man, you're gonna it's gonna recruit itself.
Well, it's a brutal. I mean, again, I'm not an excuse maker either. I went through it when the schedule was released, and I had them going 6-6. You know, I even thought that late season trip to Boston College was a terrible positional game for them because it was in like mid-November. And it's a real difficult schedule for Florida State. Let me see if we have it here real quick. Yeah, I mean, I have them at 6-6. But if you can win a couple of those games.
And that's fair.
And go 7-5 or go 8-4. I mean that is a big turnaround concerning where this program's been right. The last 3 years.
I'm a 7-5 guy regular season, win a bowl game, get 8-5. I'm going to stick with the standard is the standard, and this isn't the standard. This is lowering the expectations to get to the standard, which is to be competing for championships. But I'm obviously your Clemson's, your Florida. I'm not sure about Miami, but if you had to put my hand behind my back and tell me to make a decision, I'm going to go with Miami. And, you know, Notre Dame, those are four that are definitely tough. North Carolina is going to have a lot of high hopes and high expectations is at North Carolina. But the rest of those games should be winnable. If you can't – if those are games that you're scared of, then, man, we're way past where we need to be at.
Who has a tougher road schedule than Florida State? They go to North Carolina, they go to Clemson, and they go to Florida, and they get Boston College the week prior – which is the week after Miami. Their last 3 weeks, November 13th, with Miami at home, at BC in the cold, and then at the Swamp against the University of Florida. that's the toughest road schedule in college football.
Yeah, I'm going to go to that BC game again and decide when I get there if I'm going to the game or not.
I was going to say, you're going to go to the BC game in November. This isn't September 20th. It's November 20th.
I went last time. I had tickets and it snowed. And I said, nope, not for me.
All right, James, have fun. Here he comes right now, folks. James Coleman along with Denny Thompson and JJ. That'll do it. Thank you to all of you for getting in tonight. I want to thank our guests as well, Tony Pauline from the Pro Football Network, Robert Mays from The Athletic. Tomorrow night, we'll join you after Helmets and Heels. That'll be tomorrow after the ladies of Helmets and Heels. For our producer, RJ Saunders, my name is Rick Ballew. We'll talk then.